Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for spending some of your day with us here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about tools that are available for tracing your ancestry. And our guest is Lori Bessler. Lori, a genealogy and local history specialist in the Wisconsin Historical Society's Library, Archives, and Museum Collections Division. And if you're wondering how to get started researching your family history, you've come to the right place. Maybe you've hit a dead end and need some help. Join the conversation. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or send us an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Lori Bessler, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Nice to be here.
So where does a person start when researching their family history?
Well, a lot of people, it's best to start with what you have at home. Talk to family members, start to write out information on charts, pedigree charts, or family group sheets. Collect the information that is most easily accessible to you. And then move on to working with collections that are either online or in institutions like the Wisconsin Historical Society.
Lots of places there. We can talk some more about those specifically. I just this past weekend, a friend said that she had just started her researching her family tree, and she was so excited about it. And I bet you get that from a lot of people.
I do. It's a wonderful, wonderful journey. And, you know, some people start with finding things right away, and other people hit those brick walls right away. But that's where our staff can help people in both circumstances.
There are a number of resources that people can use to sort of piece together their family history. Let's start with the public records. What exists and how can you or I access them?
Yeah, so public records usually reference or refer to like vital records, birth, marriage, and death records. And so those tend to be starting at the county courthouse, and then the state vital record office might get a copy. Well, basically what we do is we help people identify, well, yeah, but some of this is actually online on Ancestry.com, and some of it is on microfilm at the Wisconsin Historical Society. So these public records, another example, probate files. Those are contain a will, maybe an inventory of the materials left behind by somebody. And so those might have some resources. Again, that could be online, or it might just still be at a county courthouse or at a state archives. And we are the State Archives of Wisconsin. And so it varies on what type of record it is and where you might be able to find it.
You know, the Wisconsin Historical Society, I mean, such a great resource. Maybe you can talk about the breadth of resources that you do offer to the public for genealogy.
Certainly. You know, we're a very unique institution as a state historical society. Our collection is North American in scope. It's not just Wisconsin. It's not just the Midwest. So we have a lot of materials from maps to published family histories to published local histories to lots of different resources that can help people whether you're connected to Wisconsin or never even set foot in Wisconsin. And so you have, and that includes Canada in there as well. So we have a lot, being at the top part of the United States, we have a lot of migration that's coming from the Canadian provinces and coming down into the Midwest through Wisconsin.
So, and what about, let's say I want some copies.
Yes. So if you find something in our, one of the common things that we get, people can email us. The email is asklibrary@wisconsinhistory.org. Say, for instance, you go online and you find that there's a book written about the Miller family or the Mueller family. Mm-hmm. And it has, you know, you're wondering, I wonder if that has my specific line in it. You would just email us. And we would find out, do we have the book, or we would show you how to find out if we have the book. And then we would go through that book for you and scan pages, emailing them to you.
Wow.
Yeah, we make it as easy as possible because we want these collections to be accessible. Now, a lot of times, you know, might be that someone wants an obituary. Well, they can go on our website and actually place an order for an obituary search. Only we're not going to just look at one newspaper. We're going to look at two in the region. And you don't even need to know the name of the newspaper. We do that research for you to find that.
It's an amazing service for sure. I want to give people a chance to join in. I have questions for Lori. I hope you will join in as we talk with her about genealogy and your family history. Give a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Email us to ideas@WPR.org. Love to hear from you. Well, when people are talking with their family members about their ancestors, some of that is important to do for sure. What kinds of information should they be asking about?
Well, you know, it's the stories, the personal stories that are hard to put together with the public records. And so the personal stories often get lost when every generation loses somebody. And so getting those stories down is the most important part. And that's one of our missions, is to help people share stories, both local history and family history. And so there are lots of places online. You can get a whole list of different questions to ask. But I usually tell people just to keep it simple and create a timeline about the people you're going to be asking about. Make sure you understand what you already know about that ancestor, so that when you go to grandma and you ask them about their parents, then you could actually say, I see that your mom was born in this place in this time. I understand that she only went through grade 8. And I understand those details. That way it starts that person thinking about that specific person. You don't ever want to have an interview that says, tell me everything about your childhood. You want to go more prepared. And so that's, you know, being able to do that, that's one of the things that I provide, is that guidance in a one-hour consultation that's free. And so I can have a phone conversation with someone in person or via Zoom and really help them understand, how do you do this interview? How do you set up a research plan? What kind of records are out there?
Lots of good information there. Jim in Cleveland has something for us. Let's go there. Jim, hi. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I'm calling because I've had to write my family history for a college class, and in doing so, I found out that my father, who I always knew as my grandfather, adopted my father. So I don't know who my biological grandfather is, and I'm wondering if there's a way I can find that out. And then I also went on Ancestry.com and did the
DNA.
Genetic test, you're right,
yeah.
DNA. And I always thought my ancestors were German, and that came back as one quarter Scandinavian, Norwegian,
yeah.
And Swedish. So I'm wondering if my biological grandfather is of Norwegian or Swedish descent, and how do I find that out?
Okay. Well, so Ancestry is just one of the many different ponds that people are doing DNA testing in. And so it's not a complete list of everybody out there, of course. But DNA testing really is a great tool when you're trying to handle a brick wall like unknown parentage. I always tell people it is good to have a consultation with us, because you may actually know more clues than you realize. So having the conversation with a reference librarian like I am can help you identify what records were left behind by this person, and which could have some additional clues for the paper trail. When it comes to DNA, I know, Larry, you've had Mary Eberle on before from DNA Hunters. And so she specializes in not just the paper trail, but also in looking at the DNA results, the matches, the shared matches, manipulating the information that comes out of that DNA testing that you do on Ancestry or on MyHeritage or 23andMe or any of those companies.
Jim, good luck with this. So he could give you a call, for example.
Yes, he could. Or he could email asklibrary@wisconsinhistory.org. And then he can, yeah, we would get in touch and we would have a consultation.
Asklibrary@wisconsinhistory.org.
O-R-G, correct.
All right, I'm just writing it down myself. just to there you go, Jim. I think your next bet would be to give Lori a call and have a conversation with her. Well, actually, probably email and get set it up that way.
Yes.
Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Ernie in Plover, we'll go to you. Hi, Ernie.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
I've done some genealogy in the past, and I had kind of hit a brick wall myself. We have a Stevens Point librarian, reference librarian. You might know him, Wendell Nelson. He's passed away since then. But he helped me find some more information about my family. But unfortunately, I haven't been able to find any information about my 2 times great-grandparents or my 3 time great-grandparents other than hearsay as far as when they passed away. And I've tried going through church records, but unfortunately the church they might have belonged to was burnt down. So they only have something as far back as the, 1930s.
Oh.
And they don't have anything farther than that. And so I was just wondering if there's any other way of finding out, like death records.
So what time period?
They came to Wisconsin in 1863.
Okay.
And lived in Berlin, Wisconsin, and then they moved to Stevens Point area in 1873.
Okay.
And like I said, I haven't been able to find any specific, time frame on their passing away, and I'd like to find some information if I could.
Right. Well, so one of the first things I do with people is I take them into a time machine and we go back in time. And we think about what institutions existed at the time our family was in that location at that time. And so local history is going to help us with that, finding out the names of churches, and it sounds like you've done a little bit of that already. But there's also other resources like the censuses. The federal government is documenting who's living where in 1870 is one of the, that's the one that falls in between the two dates you told me so far. So looking at the censuses, the state of Wisconsin was creating state censuses at that time too, 1875, 1865, but there are problems with 1865. So you have different institutions that are creating a paper trail about our family. That church, what denomination was it?
I think we may have lost Ernie there.
Okay. Yeah. Then it's figuring out what denomination, maybe though that certain church, that small church, had already sent on records of their church membership and such to a larger institution within their denomination. So it's tracking down the paper trail, and that's what we specialize in.
Yeah. And so census, again, for census, you have those census records.
Yes, we do. We subscribe to many sites that include access to those. And that brings up a really good point for this year. 1950 is being released. So we get to see the 1950 census as of the beginning part of April. Now, just understand, you go on April 1st, it's going to shut down the system like it did back in, 10 years ago when 1940 was released. And it will not be indexed right away. And so you really need to prepare for that to be coming out is to say, okay, who's living in 1950 and where are they living? Let's look at the small town people in our family first because they'll be easier to browse through and find them. And then maybe have to wait for indexing. Indexing won't take that long, though. I really don't think it will.
Lori Bessler, our guest today, genealogy and local history specialist in the Wisconsin Historical Society's Library, Archives, and Museum Collections Division. You can join in 800-642-1234 or email to ideas@wpr.org. Trina LaSousa, our engineer today, Courtney Everett, our producer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Taking a look at genealogy today with our guest, Lori Bessler of the Wisconsin Historical Society. Larry Mueller here. Thanks so much for joining in today with your questions and comments. You mentioned, Lori, that the census records for the 50s are going to be let go in the April, I believe you said.
Right.
Why does it take 10 years? I mean, why does it take so long for those records to be made public?
That was a ruling of the federal government. It was their records to control, and they made a decision that it had to wait 72 years before that census could be released. what's ironic is you can get so many other records about a person, you know, so it seems kind of silly to us nowadays, but it was made years and years ago. So that's why.
Ralph in Milwaukee, on to you now. Hi, Ralph.
Hi, good morning. Say, Laurie, when I jumped into genealogy, I did it with both feet on Ancestry. And, of course, that means I put a family tree on Ancestry. However, because of the proprietariness of their software, I can't move it anyplace else. I can't put it on my own computer. Can you offer some suggestions as to how I can proceed to, shall I say, other than making photocopies or printed sheets where I'd like to download it onto my own computer?
No, you should be able to export it. So if you went to Ancestry and went into their settings, one of the settings you can go into is exporting your tree. And then if you do decide that you want to delete it off of Ancestry, there's also a button there to delete the tree, which makes it permanent. You couldn't be able to, you know, recreate that. So you should be able to export it. That is something that I can talk you through in a consultation, though. The benefit of the Zoom consultation, of course, everybody knows Zoom now, is that I can share my screen and you can share your screen and we can, you know, fix these problems with the technology. Once you export the tree, it becomes a GEDCOM file. And then you should be able to read that using Roots Magic or Family Tree Maker or Legacy or Reunion, whether you have a Mac or a PC. And so that's something we can talk you through.
There you go, Ralph. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Well, on to Mike in Green Bay next. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Got a question on citizenship declarations. I'm trying to track down my great-great-grandfather. I know that he moved to the Berlin area in 1850, and from travel records before that, he'd only been in the country a couple of years then. I've checked at the regional center in Oshkosh and in Stevens Point because he was in the Berlin area, which is kind of in that overlap area. And I've come up with nothing. Is there someplace else I should be looking?
When you went there, did you talk to the archivist?
I can't remember. It's been a few years back. But okay, I did go through this, you know, look for citizenship declaration, so.
Okay. So when a person became a citizen, most of the time they went through a two processes. You went through a declaration, and then 5 years later, you filed a petition. And so you have two pieces of paper to find. Many of those, for the state of Wisconsin, the naturalization or process that happened at the county court were actually scanned by FamilySearch.org. Have you gone to that website?
I haven't hit Family Search yet. I've done all the Ancestry tromping around.
Family Search is the website for the Latter-day Saints, and they make those accessible, but you do have to have a subscription to their site. It doesn't cost anything. It's a free service, and you can pull up these digital images. You don't have to rely on indexing that may happen because you know how indexing goes with old handwriting. What I tell people is I always go through the process. So a person, our ancestor walked into the county courthouse. He could have walked into a federal courthouse, by the way. And so that is not a county record. That's a federal level record. And so it's a different process. So you go into, you picture them going to the county clerk. They make a paper trail. And Family Search goes into there years and years later saying, what will you allow us to scan or to film? Ancestry does the same thing. The state archives approaches that county clerk. And that county clerk is deciding what are they going to make accessible and what are they not. Whatever they do not make accessible, they are going to hang on to themselves. So you've got the following places to look. You got, for the naturalization, all the processes. You've got a federal court, which would be National Archives, indexed partially at least on Ancestry. For the county or circuit court, you have the actual clerk of court at the county. You've got FamilySearch.org. You've got some, not much of it shows on Ancestry for the county clerk. And then the state archives, and that's us. That's the area research centers I think you were mentioning. That's branches of our organization. So you have all those places to check.
Yeah, good luck with that. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Well, Mike in Green Bay, we'll go to you. Hi, Mike. Oh, that was, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I'm looking at the screen cross-eyed or something, not in the proper way, let's put it that way. Let's talk a bit about the home testing kits.
Yeah.
What information is typically included in those home testing kits?
Well, so you have a couple of different agencies or companies that do this, right? I mentioned some of them. There's Ancestry and 23andMe, MyHeritage, Find My Past. There's a lot of them out there. And what they do is they send you a test, and you either swab or you spit in a vial and send it in. Then they send back the results and say, go to our website, and here's your results. You get an ethnicity estimate. Estimate is the really key word here because that estimate may change. Now, an earlier caller mentioned how the paper trail says he's mostly German, but the DNA says he's somewhat Scandinavian as well. So that can be very confusing as to why do they have that kind of estimate. They're going by the DNA matching to 500 years ago. And it also depends on how many people and what people are doing the testing. And so if you don't have people who are representing everybody around the world, you're going to get a specific kind of result. The thing about Ancestry is that they've got the biggest pond. And so that's where you have most of the results. It's also important to understand that everybody goes to Ancestry to do the testing. And so the other aspect you get besides the ethnicity estimate is that you get shared matches. You find out who else in that pond shares your same DNA. And that's why finding that unknown parentage really can may have to rely on the DNA results that come up.
Cindy sent us an email. She says her mom is looking for a marriage certificate of her parents who wed in 1936 in Milwaukee County. She doesn't live near Milwaukee, so she's wondering how she can get these records.
She's probably going to have to either contact one of two institutions. One is the County Register of Deeds office. She's not going to find that marriage record anywhere online, simply because state of Wisconsin does not have the County Registers of Deeds and the State Vital Record Office have said those are not going to be showing up online. There's no index to those online. So you have to contact the Register of Deeds office or the State Vital Record Office. I suggest going into those websites for those two institutions, and they're going to have you print out a form and send payment in and go through the process.
Kathy in Wisconsin Dells will give you a chance now. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hello. I was wondering, what is the best way to access adoption records?
Mm. Adoption records can be complicated, but there are a lot of states that are opening up some of these adoption records. In the state of Wisconsin, there's an adoption search service that's through the State Vital Record Office. And so that's where I would direct you first to see what the rules are currently for Wisconsin adoptions. That's assuming it's a Wisconsin adoption.
It is.
It is, okay.
Yeah, so I would do that. If you don't know that agency, then you can always email me and I can send you the information.
All right, Kathy, thank you so much. And again, to email you, how do we do that again?
AskLibrary@wisconsinhistory.org.
There you go, Kathy. Thanks so much for that question. You can join in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org. And here's an email from Jim from Boston. A couple of questions here. He said, first, what's the best method for correcting disputed information like middle names, original birthplace, or immigration status?
So it depends on where it's being noted. If it's on a website, then contact the person who put it on their website. Like for Find a Grave, for instance, you have to look at lower down on the page to see who created that memorial page. If it's on a tree on Ancestry, then you should be able to message, if you subscribe to Ancestry, you should be able to message the person who owns that tree. And I suggest when you contact either of those people to let them know why you think it is this other name and the document that confirms why you believe that is the correct name. And it might be that you have a whole case study put together. Share that and see where it goes. It's up to them then to make that change if they want to or not. If you want to, if they don't provide or change that, then you could actually go on those websites and put your own memorial page or put your own tree up there. If it's a printed document, it's a little bit more difficult to do. You can't go into a library and pull the book and make a correction. And so that would becomes a little bit more difficult.
Jim has 125 years of family history with few, if any, younger relatives interested continuing the records. Where does he donate the 24 binders, photos, relics to? The Historical Society in the main county relatives resided in?
Yeah, that's what we get all the time is we get questions like this. So you think about where the family lived and then see if their local historical society or local genealogical society are interested in receiving this type of collection. But also ask them how they store the materials and if they make them accessible, because it's not just the living ancestors or descendants right now. I speak on behalf of those researchers in the future who want your research. They desperately want your research that you found, because I have had at least two manuscript collections that were written in the 1950s, and they deposited those at a local historical society, and I've been able to use them then. And so, and that's like four generations back.
Yeah, so that's very important. And, Jim, you know what? Maybe some of those younger relatives 20 years down the road are going to want that information. So be sure to let everybody know where you're putting that information from within your family.
Yeah.
Thoughts change over time. How do you find information of a great-granddad, times four, who was impressed by the British in Ireland during the War of 1812. He jumped ship, joined the Americans for Battle of Plattsburgh, then headed to Iowa.
Wow. Okay, that's an interesting story.
Yeah, it is.
This is one of the benefits of my job, is I get to hear these really interesting stories. So first I would start with seeing what local history materials that we have for those locations would include, because those local histories may have chapters or paragraphs talking about this specific person or patterns in history in their local area. And so that's where I would start. And going into our online catalog, our holdings actually show up in the online catalog for the UW libraries. There's also other institutions besides Wisconsin Historical Society, of course, to locate more information. Local historical societies have their collections. New England Historic Genealogical Society works a lot with New England states. It's also that our collection mimics their collection a lot, you know, so there's various places to look. So I would love to discuss that case. It's deeper than what I could cover right now.
It really sounds interesting.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jim, so much. And maybe you could get a hold of Lori at asklibrary@wisconsinhistory.org. That's the place to do it.
Right.
Well, I think you mentioned the National Archives and Records Administration. Has historical records for genealogical research, they have them. Maybe talk more about that resource.
Right. So, you know, when we look at the paper trail our ancestors left behind, it's various institutions that are creating the paper trail about our ancestors. So at the federal level, you may have military, you may have land records, different types of military or land records, certainly the censuses. Most of those are federal level records. The National Archives, their website is archives.gov. And they do have an amazing website, especially for educational resources as well. So they provide webinars and other educational opportunities. They also really go into great detail about the variety of different records they do have. You can get lost in the weeds very quickly in federal government records, but it's worth the journey, though, too.
You mentioned workshops, and that reminded me that you have some workshops coming up in spring. Maybe you could talk about them for a minute or two.
I would love to. Every fall and every spring, we offer 4 full-day workshops. And then what that means is that 4 one-hour presentations and then like a lunch in between. And so this spring, we have on February 26th, we have the basics of DNA and genealogy. And that is being taught by Dana Kelly, who is the director of the Norwegian American Genealogical Center and Naseth Library. This presentation is not strictly about Norwegian, by the way, but she's talking about the basics of DNA. So she will be able to answer in more detail a lot of those questions that have come up about DNA. Then on March 26th, Paul Milner is going to speak on Welsh genealogy. These are all of these 4 workshops are going to be virtual. So you don't have to attend in person. It's going to be all online. We record them, and for anyone who registers, they get access to those recordings for 30 days. In April 16th, the workshop is Judy Russell, who is known as the legal genealogist. She's fabulous. All these speakers are really good. This is called On the Margins, Genealogy, the Law, and Women, Children, and Minorities. And then the last one is on May 21st. Patricia Glover Howard is going to be speaking on African American genealogy, You Can Find Your Family. And so those are the 4 workshops we have set for this spring. There's also Wisconsin State Genealogical Society has a conference called Genorama that's going to be on March 25th and 26th with a speaker is Dr. Michael D. LaCopo, and then also Lee Grady, who is our lead archivist here at Historical Society, is going to be speaking on institutional records, prisons and asylums and other types of institutions that may hold information about our family.
So lots of good information. How do people sign up and find out more about these workshops?
Right. So for our workshops, wisconsinhistory.org, you go into the events calendar and you can find them listed and you can register online and you can pay for it online. And then, like I said, if you decide not to attend in person, you're still, as you register, you don't have to say you're not going to be attending in person. You just will get the recordings a week after the event. And then for Genorama, you go to wsgs.org.
So sounds like some, specific people are going to want to zero in on February 26th or March 26th or April 16th or May 21st.
Right.
Any of those particular dates. Oftentimes, I think in the past when you've been on, we've had comments or questions relating to immigration records. I think the passenger arrival records, is that what they're called?
Yes.
Where can people get this information?
So passenger lists, if you take yourself back in that time machine to when our ancestor left Ireland, for instance, they left the country and they may have left emigration, leaving the country records, emigration. And so you may have some information there. Then that part of the paper trail may actually say when they left, and then that's where you might be able to find passenger lists of entering the United States or possibly Canada, because, like I said, our holdings reach beyond the United States. They can go. We usually direct people to Ancestry to find passenger lists. There's also on Ancestry there are passport records. There are border crossings from Canada to the United States. What we can do is help you identify when did that person come by using some of the resources that we have created over here. The census of 1900 and the other ones after it ask what year did you immigrate? And that's usually the person answering it or possibly someone else in the family answering it. And so you have different, and the naturalization records, the citizenship papers, those could tell you when the person came down to the name of the ship. And that's going to help a lot finding that passenger list.
And I'm wondering, I can remember us talking in the past that people have said that names get changed sometimes as people come into the country. Just it may be a misspelling to begin with or some other reason.
Yeah, you know what is that? That's kind of a myth. And so what happened is that you look at any kind of documentary about Ellis Island, and you'll notice that they had people there who were translators. And so they were able to get more of a correct information. When the name changed is more likely to have been when they moved to the community that they stayed in, they may have decided to change the name at that point. And it's a variety of reasons why. It's also possible that they didn't even make it a formal change. They didn't go to the courthouse and make a change. Instead, they just started calling themselves something. And so certainly one of the areas that you find this a lot is in Scandinavia, where they're over in Norway. They have what's called a patronymic name, and then they have a farm name. Well, in my own circumstance, where my great-grandparents came from Norway, on the passenger list, the guy is going by his patronymic name, Evensen, but when he's over here, he goes by Torski, which is his farm name. And so it can be very cumbersome, but that's, again, what we can help. And as well with these institutions like the Max Kata Institution for German-American Studies that's here on the UW campus and the Norwegian-American Genealogical Center. There's a Czech group up in the Twin Cities. There's an Irish group in the Twin Cities. So we can help you identify more resources.
Joan and Cooley, we'll give you a chance. Thanks for joining us.
Are you talking to me?
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, well, you know, I can't hear very well. Listen, I just tuned into the program, but I have been wondering for decades when my mother and father were married or when my older brother was born.
And I think the story Joan was saying was that they eloped.
Ah, okay. Where did they live when they were eloping?
And all the old spinsters were furious because my mother had captured the best old bachelor in the Newport. So.
I love that. Okay, well, so if you picture it, I mean, there are a lot of places they could have eloped. But wherever they did elope to, the county clerk is usually documenting that marriage. And so that's where I would start with is the county. If you don't know what county, and it could be in Wisconsin, it could be they went to Illinois or they went to Minnesota or, you know, they could have stayed anywhere in Wisconsin. A state vital record office may have had that that record created.
So you would go to state vital records office online?
Yes, you would call up the name of the state. So Minnesota State Vital Records Office is a common Google search. Or something like Blue Earth County County Register of Deeds Office or Recorder's Office. You know, it's also possible. There's a website called deathindexes.com, and that's a great place to look for any collections that may be online in any of these websites, Ancestry down to a county clerk who's put some stuff online.
Well, Lori, it has been a great pleasure to be able to talk with you today, and I know we'll have a chance to do it again down the road. So thank you so much. Lori Bessler is the genealogy and local history specialist in the Wisconsin Historical Society's Library, Archives, and Museum Collections Division. And again, if you want some information from her, go to asklibrary@wisconsinhistory.org. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network.